You? Caroline was 72 years old, according to her bond sheet. She had skin like an alligator and bleached blonde hair that was teased into a rat's nest. If it was a wig, she got swindled no matter what she paid. She was wearing orthopedic shoes, fishnet stockings, a tight spandex miniskirt, and a skimpy tank top that showed a lot of wrinkled cleavage. I was guessing she smoked 3 packs a day and slept naked in a tanning bed. I glanced at my watch.
Okay, I can see you're all antsy to make this bust. How about we check out, and then we give her the bad news?
Deal. Lula took the dildo and the DVD to the register and handed Caroline her credit card.
We're having a 2-for-1 sale on dildos, Caroline said. Don't you want to pick out a second?
Hear that? Lula said to me. 2-for-1 sale. Go get yourself a dildo.
I don't actually need
2-for-1, Lula said. Pick one for crying out loud. How many times in life do you get offered a free dildo?
I took the first one I saw and brought it to Lula.
That's a beauty, Caroline said. You have good taste. It's our precision replica of the famous adult movie star Herbert Horsecock. It weighs 5 pounds and it's solid rubber. It's one of our few uncircumcised dildos. It even comes in a special edition red velvet drawstring carrying sack.
Lula got her credit card back and took possession of the dildos.
Okay, she said to me. Do your thing.
I gave Caroline my card and introduced myself and gave her the baloney about rebonding.
Who's going to watch the store if I leave now? She asked.
Is there someone you can call to come in and babysit?
What, like my 90-year-old mother?
You're not exactly doing a lot of business, I told her.
Sweetie, I just sold over $100 worth of shit.
You sold it to Lula?
Yeah,
Caroline said in her deep smoker's voice.
Life is good.
It isn't that good, I told her. You're going to have to come with me now.
Okay, she said. Just let me get something.
And she dipped behind the counter. What are you getting? I asked. She reappeared with a sawed-off shotgun.
This big gun, she said. That's what I'm getting. Take your dildos and march your ass out of my store.
Lula and I speed-walked out of the store and rammed ourselves into the Firebird.
Look on the bright side, Lula said. You got a free dildo, and you got a great movie. Happy birthday, early.
I don't need a dildo.
Sure you do. You never know when it might come in handy. And this Herbert Horsecock dildo's got some heft to it. You could use it as a doorstop or a paperweight, or you could decorate it with those little twinkle lights at Christmas.
I need an apprehension. Vinny isn't the only one worried about money. I need rent money. I shuffled through the files. I want to do phone work on some of these, make some calls to verify employment, see if anyone's at the home address. Let's go back to the office.
Where am I supposed to park? Lula wanted to know. There's not supposed to be people parked in the slot back here. This is a private lot for the bonds office. We should call the cops on these people.
She circled around the block and looked for a spot on the street.
I swear I've never seen so many cars. They must be having a party at the beauty parlor.
Carmen hasn't moved from her spot, I said. Lula glanced over as she crept down the street, looking for a parking space.
She's hunkered in. Ranger really pissed her off.
I was still having a hard time believing Carmen's story. I couldn't see Ranger married, and I couldn't see Ranger cleaning out the bank account. Ranger played a little loose with the law, but he had a very firm moral code, and from what I could see, he wasn't hurting for money. I checked my phone to make sure it was on, and I hadn't missed a call.
Still haven't heard from him? Lula asked.
No, he must be underground. He'd only been gone for 24 hours. It was too early to be worried about his safety, but I was worried all the same. It was all too weird. Lula parked 2 cars down from me, and we walked to the office. I watched the black SUV for a protruding gun barrel, but saw none. When we got to the office, we realized it was packed with people.
What the heck?
Lula said, pushing through the mob to Connie. Connie was at her desk, trying to talk to the people crowded directly in front of her.
I ran an ad in the paper this morning for the bond enforcement agent job, she said to me, and this is the response, and the phone hasn't stopped ringing. I had to turn it over to the answering server so I could try to clear this out.
Looks like they emptied out the funny farm and everyone came here, Lula said. Who are these people? They look like movie extras. They all look like that bounty hunter guy on television, only most of them have better hair. I tell you, they should take that TV bounty hunter guy to the beauty parlor.
Connie handed me a steno pad and pen.
You take the front of the room and I'll take the back. Get names and phone numbers and some work information and tell them we'll be in touch. Put a star by anyone who has potential.
45 minutes later, the last of the BEA wannabes walked out the door, and Connie hung out a clothes sign. Two people were left sitting on the couch, Joyce Barnhart and Melvin Pickle. Joyce was dressed in black leather, her eyes heavily lined in black, her red hair teased and lacquered, her lips artificially inflated and painted red to match her hair. She had her arms crossed and her legs crossed, and her foot jiggled impatiently in stiletto-heeled boots. Joyce was a flesh-eating fungus. She'd been through more husbands than I could count, and each time she chewed them up and spit them out, she got richer. 3 months of marriage to Joyce, and a man was willing to bankrupt himself to get free. When I was in first grade, Joyce threw my crayons in the toilet. When I was in second grade, she spit in my lunch. In third grade, she told everybody I didn't wear underpants. In fourth grade, she said I had 3 nipples. In high school, she somehow took a picture of me in the girls' locker room and had it made into a flyer and distributed 200.
I am very insulted by this whole piece of shit, Joyce said. If you needed another bounty hunter, why didn't you call me? You know Vinny brings me in when he needs help.
First off, Connie said, Vinny doesn't bring you in when he needs help. He brings you in when he needs to fornicate with a barnyard animal. And second, I didn't call you because we all hate you.
And?
And that's it, Connie said.
So why didn't you call me?
Melvin Pickle was sitting beside Joyce. He looked like he was trying to be invisible.
Who's this little turd? Joyce said, turning to Pickle.
He's going to be doing some filing for us, Connie said.
Why did he get a job and I didn't get a job? Joyce wanted to know. What's so special about him?
I'm a pervert, Pickle said.
And, Joyce said, hello, what am I, chopped liver?
Why don't you let her work the LC file, I said to Connie, the one you keep in your bottom drawer.
What's LC stand for? Joyce asked.
Large cash, I told her. Also lost cause, but she probably didn't want to be bothered knowing that. Connie pulled 7 folders out of her bottom desk drawer and gave the top 3 to Joyce.
Here you go, she said to Joyce. Good luck, nice seeing you. Mazel tov.
Joyce took the folders and looked down at Pickle.
Love the herpes. Adds color to your face.
Thank you,
Pickle said, his hand to his mouth, covering the herpes.
Have a nice day.
Connie locked the door after her.
I swear she's the Antichrist. I always smell sulfur burning when she's in the office.
Maybe it's the salve I put on my cold sore, Pickle said.
I don't want to be mean about it, Lula said to Pickle, but you might want to think about wearing a mask and rubber gloves when you do the filing.
It's going away, Pickle said.
We all gave an involuntary shudder.
I'll go through the list of freaks and line up some interviews, Connie said to me. I'll schedule them for tomorrow morning. I'd like you to be here to help.
Sure. I looked at my watch. 1 o'clock. Louise Queen would be on his corner. New game plan, I said to Lula. Let's go get Louise, and then I'll do my phone work from home. Louise Queen is a slim 5'4" Hispanic sweetie pie. He turns tricks for a living and doesn't discriminate between male and female. I've been told he'll do anything, and I prefer not to think about that too much. He works the corner across from the train station. The police have pretty much cleaned that area out, except for Louise Queen. Louise refuses to leave, which is why he got picked up for soliciting. Louise was wearing a pristine white tank top today, the better to show the muscle definition in his arms and his freshly shaved chest. He was in tight jeans, trimmed out in a wide belt decorated with rhinestones, and he was strutting his stuff in his trademark black lizard skin cowboy boots. Lula pulled to the curb, and I rolled my window down to talk to him.
Look who's here, Louise said, big smile. My favorite bounty hunters. You girls need something from Louise? I got a few minutes for you. You need to get relaxed?
Tempting, I said, but I had other plans for you. You missed your court date. You need to rebond. Get in the car and we'll give you a ride.
Aw, man, Louise said. You're going to ruin my business day. This is my housewife time. They come for a little tickle from Louise before the kiddies get out of school.
Are you going to make me come out there and get you?
You think you could take me?
Louise said, still smiling.
Bring it on, Mama. I do Pilates. I'm tone perfection.
I've got 2 inches and 10 pounds on you, and if I have Lula get out of the car, you'll be nothing but a grease spot on the pavement.
Louis did a frustrated arm flap and slid into the back seat.
I don't know why you bust my balls. I'm just out here making a living.
You need a new corner.
I like this corner. It got sunshine.
It's also got cops.
I know, but I can't move until I tell all my regulars.
You need a mailing list, Lula said, heading for the courthouse. You should get a website.
Luis opened the pleasure treasures bag on the back seat.
Looks like you ladies been shopping. Whoa, baby, that's a monster. I think I'm blushing.
You can drop me at the office, I told Lula. Then you can pick Connie up and take her to the courthouse with you and Luis so she can get him released again. 15 minutes later, I swapped seats with Connie.
Don't forget your toys,
Luis said, handing me the bag. I took the bag, waved Luis and Connie and Lula away, and crossed the street to the SUV. The window slid down, and Carmen looked out at me. I decided to try friendly. How's it going? Carmen didn't say anything. Can I get you something? Lunch? Water? Nothing. I'd really like to ask you a few questions. I don't think... The gun came up. Okay, then, I said. Good talk. I crossed the street, angled into the Mini, cranked it over, and eased into traffic. I drove 2 blocks on Hamilton and turned into the Berg at the hospital with Carmen close on my bumper. I've had occasion to lose people, and I had a route that worked. I wound through the Berg, took Chambers to Liberty, and returned to the Berg. Between traffic and lights and the back alleys of the Berg, I was always able to lose the faint of heart. And I lost Carmen. Probably she'd eventually go to my apartment building, but I thought eventually was better than now. Chapter 4 I had the phone beside me while I worked at the dining room table. I was prioritizing the skips, making calls to check on addresses and employment history, trying to determine who was where, and I was hoping for a call from Ranger. The call that finally came in was from my grandmother.
Big news, she said. The funeral parlor is having a viewing tonight. It's the first viewing with the new owners. Catherine Machenko is getting laid out. Dolly did her hair and she gave me all the dirt. She said the new owners are from Jersey City. Never owned a funeral parlor before. Fresh out of mortuary school. Dolly said they were a nice young gay couple. Dave and Scooter. Dave is the mortician and Scooter makes the cookies for the viewings. Isn't that something?
Some communities have country clubs, some have senior centers, some have shopping malls and movie theaters. The Berg has 2 funeral parlors. Only Thursday night bingo occasionally draws a bigger crowd than a well-run viewing in the Berg.
I tell you, those homosexuals are all over the place, Grandma said. And they get all the good jobs, too. They get to be cowboys and morticians. I never wanted to be a homosexual, but I always wanted to be a cowboy. What do you suppose it's like to be a homosexual? Do you think their privates look different?
All privates look different, I told her.
I haven't seen too many, mostly your grandfather's, and that wasn't a real pretty sight. I wouldn't mind seeing some others. I'd like to see some minority privates, and maybe some blue ones. I was listening to one of them late-night radio shows, and they were talking about blue balls. I thought that sounded colorful. I wouldn't mind seeing some blue balls.
My mother groaned in the background.
Hold on, dear, Grandma Mazur said. Your mother wants to talk to you.
I'll do your laundry if you take your grandmother to the viewing, my mother said. And I'll iron it if you make sure she doesn't get into trouble. If it's closed casket, I don't want her trying to get it open. Grandma thinks if she made an effort to come out to a viewing, the least they can do is let her take a look at the dead guy. I guess I understand her point of view, but it makes for a scene when the lid is nailed down.
That's asking a lot, I said to my mother.
I'll give her a ride, but I can't guarantee no trouble. Please, my mother said. I'm begging you. Carmen was in my lot when I exited the building. She was parked one space over from my Mini, and her windows were down to allow air into the car. I waved when I walked past. I'm going to pick up my grandmother, I said. I'm taking her to a viewing on Hamilton. Then I'll take her home and probably stop in to see Morelli. Carmen didn't say anything. She was wearing mirrored lenses, and she wasn't smiling. She followed me out of the lot into the Berg, and she parked half a block down while I went in to get Grandma. Grandma was at the door when I arrived. Her gray hair was tightly curled, her face was powdered, her nails were newly manicured and matched her red lipstick. She was wearing a navy dress and low-heeled patent leather pumps. She was ready to go. Isn't this exciting? Grandma said. A new funeral director. Catherine is lucky to be his first. There'll be a real crowd there tonight.
My mother was in the foyer with my grandmother. Try to behave yourself, she said to my grandmother. Constantine had years of experience. He knew how to manage all the little disasters that happen when people get together. These two young men are brand new at this. For as long as I can remember, Constantine Stiva owned the funeral parlor. He was a pillar of the community and the funeral director of choice for the Berg bereaved. As it turned out, he was also a little insane and had a homicidal past, and he's now spending his remaining years in maximum security at Rahway Prison. I've heard rumors that Con prefers prison life to seeing Grandma Mazur walk through his front door, but I'm not sure they're true. My father was in the living room watching television. His eyes never left the screen, but he mumbled something that sounded like poor, unsuspecting, bastard funeral director. My father used to keep an old Army Issue 45 in the house as protection against intruders. When Grandma Mazur moved in, my mother quietly got rid of the 45, fearing someday my father would lose patience and blow Grandma away. If it had been me, I would have also gotten rid of sharp knives. Personally, I think Grandma Mazur is a hoot, but then I don't have to live with her. We'll be fine, I said to my mother. Don't worry. My mother made the sign of the cross and bit into her lower lip. I drove the short distance to the funeral parlor and dropped Grandma in front of the building. I'll find a parking place and meet you in there, I said. Grandma tottered up the stairs to the big, wide front porch, and I motored slowly down the street, followed by Carmen. I parked one block north. Carmen chugged past me, hooked a U-turn, and parked across the street. I was in no rush to get back to the funeral parlor, so I called Ranger again. Hi, I said to his answering service. It's me. Things are looking up. Your wife is tailing me, but she hasn't shot at me yet today, so that's a good thing, right? And you need to answer your damn phone calls. I cracked my knuckles and looked at my watch. I hated viewings. I hated the cloying smell of too many flowers. I hated the small talk I'd be forced to make. I hated the inevitable dead person. Maybe I could procrastinate with another phone call. I called Morelli and told him I might be stopping around after the viewing. He said he'd take a nap in anticipation. That didn't take up nearly enough time, so I called my best friend, Mary Lou.
What? She yelled into the phone. I can't hear you. I'm putting the kids to bed.
Bedlam in the background.
I'll call some other time, I said.
I disconnected Mary Lou and called my sister Valerie.
I'm feeding the baby, she said. Is it important?
Just checking in, I said. Nothing that can't wait. Since I couldn't think of anyone else to call, I left the comfort of my Minnie and trudged off to the funeral parlor. I worked my way through the crush of people to slumber room number one, where Catherine Machenko was laid to rest. Grandma was close to the casket, not wanting to miss any of the action. She was with Catherine Machenko's sisters and two young men dressed in black.
This is the new funeral director, Grandma said to me, Dave Nelson, and this is his partner Scooter.
Dave looked like Paul Bunyan in a suit. He was huge, dark hair slightly receding. Head insignificant on his tree-trunk neck, barrel-chested, thighs bulging against his pants fabric.
Dave used to be a wrestler, Grandma said.
No shit. Scooter and Dave were yin and yang. Scooter was average height, slight build, blonde hair nicely cut, pale blue eyes. Very Norwegian, or maybe German. Definitely Nordic. I was guessing his suit was Armani, and probably his tie cost more than my car. They were wearing wedding bands, and when they looked at each other, you knew they liked being together. I was a little jealous. Again, but in an entirely different way. I wondered if I ever looked like that when I was with Morelli. Lucky for Dave and Scooter, the Berg wouldn't care about their sexual orientation as long as the cookies were good and they had some expertise at plugging the occasional bullet hole. Both Dave and Scooter were beaming, proud of their first viewing, flushed with the success of the party. Very different from the calm, cool, solicitous demeanor always displayed by Constantine Stiva.
I just heard they have one of those alerts out here in Trenton for a kidnapping, Grandma said to me. A little girl was kidnapped in Florida, and they think she might be here in Trenton because she was kidnapped by her father, and her father lives here. I bet you could find her.
The little girl's name is Julie Martine, Scooter said. It's all over the television. She's 10 years old, and they think she's with her birth father, Carlos Minoso. My heart stuttered in my chest, and for a moment there was no air around me. Ranger's legal name is Ricardo Carlos Minoso, but he never uses the Ricardo. What else did they say on television? I asked him.
That was mostly it. They showed a picture of the man from when he was in the Army, Special Forces, and they showed a picture of the little girl.
I looked at my watch. We can't stay much longer, I said to Grandma. I promised Joe I'd come over tonight.
That works perfectly for me, Grandma said. I've seen everything, and there's a television show on in a half hour that I like to watch. It's a rerun on The Crocodile Hunter. That crocodile guy is a real cutie in those little shorts.
Make sure you get a cookie before you leave, Scooter said. I bake them myself, chocolate chip and oatmeal raisin.
We hit the cookie table on the way out.
Look at this, Grandma said, taking two cookies. Scooter put them on doilies and everything. Such a nice young man. You can entrust your loved one to a funeral parlor that takes the time to use doilies.
I dropped Grandma off, and I went home to my apartment. I said hello to Rex, hung my bag and jacket on a hook in the hall, and went straight to my computer. I surfed a couple news sites, and then went to the site for missing children. The little girl was pretty, with an infectious smile. She had brown hair pulled into a ponytail and big brown eyes. She lived with her mom and stepdad in Miami. She was picked up on her way home from school and not seen since. She was with two girlfriends who said she got into a car with a man police believed to be her birth father. The description of the man that the girls gave to the police fit Ranger, and the photo shown was of Ranger. I shut the computer down and called Morelli. Have you gotten the missing child alert? I asked him.
Oswald just called me.
Do you know anything I don't know?
Oswald got all his information from television.
What do you think?
Ranger is not my favorite person. I think his wiring isn't code. And it wouldn't surprise me to hear he's kidnapped his daughter, but I'd be very surprised if he didn't have a good reason. Are you still planning on coming over?
I don't know. I'm really thrown by this. Carmen showing up and now the little girl getting kidnapped.
I have a cake, Morelli said. Got it just for you.
You don't.
Only one way to find out.
Okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes. I hung up and called Tank. What's going on? I asked him.
Business as usual.
What's going on with Ranger?
He's offline.
And?
Keep the faith.
I disconnected and made a mental note not to call Tank unless I was bleeding profusely and he was the only other person on Earth. Chapter 5 Morelli was slow to kill the alarm on his clock radio. You purposely let that ring so I'd wake up, I said to him.
I didn't want you to miss anything.
Such as, oh God, give me a break. What time is it? It's still dark out.
There's this thing that happens when I wake up next to you, Morelli said. It's very uncomfortable, in a good way.
What about the cake you promised?
It's baking.
That was obvious. Can't you go back to sleep and pick this up in an hour or two? I asked Morelli.
I have to be at my desk in an hour or two, and my body doesn't work like that. Once the cake's in the oven, it keeps baking until it's done.
I'm tired. Maybe this is one of those times when you can have your cake and eat it too, you know, all by yourself.
Do you want to watch?
No, I want to sleep. Morelli nibbled on my neck, and his hand snaked around to my breast.
Okay.
He said with his voice all soft and old whiskey smooth.
Go back to sleep. We'll do this some other time.
I blew out a sigh. What kind of cake is it? I asked. Coffee cake? Birthday cake? We were lying spoon fashion, and I could feel Morelli laughing behind me.
It's a cannoli, he said.
Oh boy, Lula said when I swung into the office. Only one thing puts that kind of smile on your face.
I had cake for breakfast.
Must have been damn good cake.
Melvin Pickle was working at filing.
I can't eat cake for breakfast, he said. It's bad for my blood sugar level.
She didn't mean cake, Lula said. That was one of them double entendre things. Boy, you're awful slow on the pickup for a pervert.
Did you hear about Ranger? I asked Connie and Lula.
He came up on my news service this morning, Connie said.
What did the service say? Have they found him or his daughter?
No, it just said she was picked up after school by a man who met Ranger's description and not seen since. I tried paging him, but he's not answering.
I glanced out the front window. I see Carmen is back at the curb.
This just gets weirder and weirder, Lula said. This is like Twilight Zone shit.
Connie gave me a clipboard and then gave one to Lula.
I don't have time to think about it this morning. We have people coming in for the BEA job. I cut the group of applicants in half by eliminating everyone with a criminal record, she said. The rest have been divided into three groups. I'm calling those groups Best, Okay, and God Help Us. Hopefully we'll find someone before we get to God Help Us. The Best group is coming in this morning. We're going to give everyone a 15-minute interview, so this shouldn't take all day. I know you're anxious to go out there and round up some bad guys.
Yeah, I can't wait, Lula said. I need to look like an idiot at least twice a day to keep myself humble.
My clipboard had 7 bios on it. Connie had run simple background checks on today's group and gotten the basics. First up was George Panko. He was scheduled for a 9 o'clock interview. At 9:15, we ripped his sheet off the clipboard.
Guess he changed his mind, Lula said. Probably decided to get a good job, like feeding lions or cleaning kennel cages.
Becky Willard strolled in at 9:25.
I figured you'd be running late, she said. So I stopped for a latte, and the moron behind the counter took so long, and then he didn't put the right kind of milk in it. I asked for a skim milk latte, and I know he gave me regular milk. I mean, do I look stupid? So he had to make it over, and he took so long again.
She looked around.
This office is so dreary. Would I have to spend much time here? And I get a company car, right? I mean, you don't expect me to use my own car to apprehend fugitives, do you?
When Willard left, Connie ripped Willard's sheet off the clipboard.
2 down.
The 9:30 interview was precisely on time. He was dressed in head-to-toe black leather and had a 6-shooter strapped to his leg.
That gun looks vintage, Lula said. Is it real? You bet your ass, he said.
And he pulled the gun, twirled it around on his finger, and shot a hole in the front panel of Connie's desk.
Oops, he said. Sorry about that. Slipsies.
Another sheet got ripped off the board. 4 to go. Anton Rutter was next in the hot seat.
I can do this job, he said. I'll go out there and get those motherfuckers. They won't even know what hit them. I'll have their law-breaking ass in the trunk of my car.
Actually, we almost never transport someone in the trunk, I said.
Yeah, but that's because you're pussy, Anton said. This whole office is pussy. I figure that's why I got the call back. You need a real man here. If we needed a real man, we wouldn't have called your runt ass, Lula said. No offense, Anton said. I like pussy. I especially like fat black pussy. But it's not like pussy can do the same job a man can do. Everybody knows that. That's a scientific fact.
Lula was on her feet, rooting through her shoulder bag.
Excuse me? Did you just imply I was fat? Is that what I heard?
Probably you should leave before Lula finds her gun, I said to Anton. Lula had her head in her bag.
It's in here somewhere.
Anton hustled out the door, and Connie ripped his sheet off her clipboard. 3 interviews left, and I was having a hard time concentrating. I was in a state over Ranger. Martin Dorn arrived for his interview looking relatively normal, with the exception of a mustache drawn onto his upper lip with a black magic marker.
It's always been my lifelong dream to be a bounty hunter, Dorn said. I watch all the television shows, and I went to bounty hunter school on the internet. You can ask me anything about being a bounty hunter, and I bet I know the answer.
That's promising, Connie said. Do you know you have a magic marker mustache on your upper lip?
I tried to grow a real one, but I didn't have any luck at it, he said. I'm good with a magic marker. I used one to draw a lightning bolt on my penis. Would you like to see it?
Melvin Pickle was filing reports on the other side of the bank of cabinets. He popped his head up to take a look at Dorn, and Connie ripped Dorn's sheet off her clipboard. The 6th applicant was a no-show. The 7th was Brendan Yalinowski.
I need to know my rights, Brendan said. Am I allowed to shoot people? Suppose I shot someone while I was in the act of making an apprehension. Only suppose that person wasn't actually the guy I was looking for. Suppose it was someone who looked a little like the guy. And suppose he wasn't armed. And this is just theoretical, but suppose it turned out that I knew him and owed him money.
Connie slouched in her seat when Brendan left.
Is it too early in the day to start drinking?
This was a big bust, Lula said. Who'd think this would be so hard? It's not like we were going to be picky. I mean, look what you got doing this job. A former hoe and someone who used to sell cheap ladies' panties.
I was a buyer, I said. The job wasn't that bad.
Yeah, but you got fired.
Laid off. It wasn't my fault.
Vinny's office door was closed.
Where's Vinny?
I asked Connie. I haven't seen him all week.
He's in Biloxi, bail bonds conference. And I hate to bring this up, but you need to bring in a couple of the high bonds. We need Lonnie Johnson and Leon James.
I made some phone calls last night and I couldn't get anything on Johnson. Someone a lot scarier than I am is after him and he's on the run. I'll try Leon James today.
I'll go with you, Lula said. Only I gotta be careful because I just got my nails done and I don't want to ruin them. This is my big night. I'm making my debut with the what tonight. We're going to be at that bar on 3rd Street, The Hole.
That's a pretty rough bar. I didn't know they had bands, I said to Lula.
We're the first. They're trying something new. They said they wanted to expand their clientele.
I hope Sally isn't going and dragged to that bar.
He's got a dress that's like mine, only his is in red on account of he don't look so good in gold. People be disappointed if Sally wasn't in drag. That's his thing. He's famous for his accessorizing.
Salvatore Sweet is a good friend in a constant state of reinvention. He's played lead guitar with a bunch of bands, the Funky Butts, the Pits, Beggar Boys, and Howling Dogs. When I met him, he was playing in drag for the first time with the Lovelies, and that was where he hit the jackpot. Actually, it was just a local jackpot, but it was more success than he'd ever seen. When the band broke up, Sally continued to perform in drag. He's currently driving a school bus days and playing guitar nights. His bands are always a collection of misfits. Good musicians most of the time who, for one reason or another, don't fit in anywhere else. In a bizarre way, Lula would be a perfect addition.
If he goes in drag to the hole, he's going to be accessorizing in the hospital, Connie said.
Something to think about, Lula said.
I glanced out the front window at the SUV. Does she ever get out? I asked Connie. Just a stretch, walk around?
I haven't seen her out since that first time when she came into the office looking for you.
I have a sick stomach over this Ranger thing, I told Connie. I think we should get some background on Julie Martine's mother and stepfather. And maybe you could poke around in Arlington. I'd like to know more about Ranger's business there. 10 minutes later, we were in Lula's car on the way to Leon James's last known address, and I was on the phone with Morelli. I need some help, I told him. I'd like to know the captures Ranger made through his Virginia office, and it would be helpful if I could get a photograph of the Virginia Ranger.
The captures I should be able to get for you. The photo will only happen if he has a mugshot or a Virginia driver's license.
Good enough. And remember, it's Friday, and we're expected for dinner at my parents' house.
I'll be there, Morelli said.
Lula parked in front of a 2-story brick row house in a neighborhood adjacent to the Berg.
Here it is, she said. This is the address on the file.
Leon James had listed the house as his residence and had also used it to secure the bond. He was a penny-ante hitman, selling his services to anyone with a grudge. Usually evidence is scarce against him, and witnesses have been known to recant stories and occasionally to disappear. He was wanted for arson and attempted murder. He was a third-time offender, and this was going to be an ugly capture.
How are we going to do this? Lula wanted to know. This isn't a nice guy. He kills people and burns down houses.
I think we'll have to be tricky.
Yeah, tricky. I like the sound of that.
First thing, we need to get him out of his house and into someplace public. Then we need to distract him until we can get him cuffed.
Okay, Lula said. I'm with you.
That's it. That's all I've got.
That's not much, Lula said.
Suppose one of us calls him and says she wants to hire him to do a job, and then she could set up a meeting.
Good thinking. That's going to be you doing the calling, right? You're a way better liar than I am.
I cut my eyes to Lula. You're an excellent liar.
Maybe, but I got to be saving myself for tonight. I can't afford to use my voice too much.
That is so lame, I said to Lula.
It's the best I could come up with.
I punched Leon's number into my cell phone. I'd like to speak to Leon James, I said to the guy who answered.
Speaking.
I think I might need some help in solving a problem.
Uh-huh.
You were recommended.
Oh, yeah. Who recommended me?
Butchie.
I don't know any Butchie.
Well, he knows you, and he recommended you.
What sort of problem we talking about?
I don't want to say on the phone.
That sounds promising already, James said.
I was hoping we could meet somewhere. I need to solve this problem fast.
It'll cost you.
I don't care. Just solve my friggin' problem, okay? I'd agreed to meet Leon James in a small park in the Berg. The park wasn't much more than a patch of grass, half a block in size. It had a couple trees and a couple benches, and that was it. Once in a while, an old guy would sit on a bench and soak up sun. And once in a while, a couple kids would sit on a bench and smoke some weed. And once in a while, someone would walk his dog in the park. Lula and I had driven to Morelli's house and commandeered Bob. The plan was that I'd meet Leon James at the bench, and while we were talking, Lula would mosey by with Bob. Then when James was distracted, one of us would zap him with a stun gun. I dropped Lula and Bob off on a side street, turned a corner, and parked not far from the bench. I walked to the bench and sat down with my purse in my lap. After 5 minutes, a car pulled up behind Lula's Firebird, and James got out. He looked around, straightened his jacket, and walked toward me. It was 80 degrees out, and there was only one reason to be wearing a jacket. James was 5'9" and stocky. The fact that he'd been caught numerous times for arson put him in the not-too-bright category. Arson is a respected profession among certain subcultures in Jersey, and the good ones don't get caught. The good ones channel lightning and mysterious acts of spontaneous combustion. I fought stage fright as I watched James cut across the grass. My heart was racing, and I could feel panic sticking in my throat. Deep breath, I told myself. Be calm. Be cool.
You looking for a problem solver? James said, coming up to the bench.
I might be. He sat down.
What kind of problem you got?
A cheating husband.
And?
I'm told it would be cheaper to pay you to take care of the bastard than it would be to divorce him and lose half of everything.
Works for me.
James was turned toward me, and I could see Lula and Bob coming up behind him. Bob was straining at the leash, wanting to run, but with Lula at the other end, it was like pulling a refrigerator. Are you interested or what?
Sure, I'm a professional. I don't need to know why. I just need to know you'll pay.
Good. Then it's settled. We just have to agree on a price.
I don't negotiate price. My price is fixed. 10 big ones. 5 now, and 5 when the job is completed.
Nobody told me that part, I said. I don't have a lot of money on me.
Then you have a problem.
Do you take credit cards?
Lady, I'm not the Gap.
How about a check?
How about cash, he said.
Wait a minute, let me think. I just have to go to the bank. Can you wait while I go to the bank?
Sorry, no can do. I have a visibility problem.
Lula was about 20 feet away, and Bob was chugging like a freight train, pulling against his collar, trying to get to me. James turned to see what was making all that noise behind him. I slipped the stun gun out of my bag, pushed the button, and the little on light didn't go on. James turned back to me and saw the stun gun.
What the fuck?
I looked at Lula in utter panic. Lula let go of Bob's leash. Bob bounded over and took a flying leap for me, knocking me off the bench. James reached for his gun, and Lula roundhoused James on the side of the head with her purse. I still had the stun gun in my hand, and suddenly the light blinked on. I shoved Bob out of the way, scrambled to grabbing distance of James, and caught him in the ankle with the prongs of the stun gun. James squeaked, slumped over, and slid to the ground. I flopped over and lay spread eagle on my back, hand to my heart for a moment. I was breathing hard, and I was leaking nervous fear, sweating in places I didn't think had sweat glands.
What the heck was that? Lula wanted to know. You had an expression on your face like you just had an irritable bowel experience.
I looked at the stun gun. The light was off again. Low battery, I said.
Don't you hate when that happens?
What have you got in your purse? It sounded like you hit him with a frying pan.
I got my gun in there. And I got a couple rolls of quarters for meters. And I got a mag light. And a stun gun. And cuffs.
She pulled the cuffs out and handed them to me.
I guess you should cuff him, except it seems like a shame to ruin Bob's fun.
Bob was jumping around on James, trying to get him to play. He'd snuffle James, and then he'd jump up and land on James with all 4 feet and do a growly thing, and then he'd jump around some more.
Gonna be hard to explain all those muddy Bob-sized footprints on him, Lula said. Going to be even harder to explain all the dog slobber on his crotch.
I dragged Bob off, and I cuffed James behind his back and stood. Do you have any shackles?
I got shackles in the trunk, Lula said. You babysit, and I'll go get them.
James moaned and sucked in some air and squinted up at me.
Fuck. What happened?
Bond enforcement, I said. Lula hit you with her purse. He sat up and looked at his slacks.
What's all over my pants? Why are my pants wet?
Lula fell in love, I told him. I thought that would put him in a better mood than telling him it was Bob Slime. Chapter 6.
Are we hot or what? Lula said. We captured Leon James.
We'd done a drive-through at Cluck in a Bucket to celebrate our success, and then we'd processed James, picked up our body receipt, and now we were back in the office. Connie was smiling.
The morning was a downer, but the rest of the day was good. That was a big bond. And it turns out Melvin Pickle is a filing demon.
Bob was sitting on my foot, pressing his body against my leg. He'd gone for a walk, eaten two pieces of chicken, slurped up a bowl of water, and now he was ready to nap. I'm taking Bob home, I told Connie. If any information comes in on Ranger, give me a call on my cell.
Yeah, and I'm going home too, Lula said. I gotta get ready for tonight.
We have another batch of job applicants coming in tomorrow, Connie said, starting at 9 o'clock.
I loaded Bob into the back seat of the Mini and rolled the window down so he could stick his head out. The car was wall-to-wall dog, but Bob looked happy on the cushy leather. I turned the engine over and moved into the stream of traffic with my eyes on Carmen, expecting her to follow. When I stopped for the light at the corner, the SUV was still at the curb, no sign of life. Carmen had probably fallen asleep at the wheel. Or maybe she'd gone for a walk. Or maybe she was in a second car using the SUV as a decoy. I wound through the burg watching my rearview mirror for a tail. No tail appeared, so I drove to Morelli's. I deposited Bob in the house, locked up, and got back into the Mini. I motored the short distance to my apartment, parked, and rode the elevator with Mrs. Bessler.
How was your day, dear?
She asked, pressing the button for the second floor. Very good. And yours?
My day was excellent. I visited the Chiropodist this morning. That's always exciting.
The doors opened and Mrs. Bessler sang out,
Second floor, ladies' lounge.
Here's the thing about my apartment. No matter how chaotic my day has been, my apartment is usually calm and silent. There was a time when my answering machine would be filled with messages when I came home, but my answering machine broke and was never replaced, so now everyone calls my cell. Rex is happy about this since no one disturbs him while he's sleeping. I don't cook, so the kitchen is never messy. My furnishings are sparse since the clutter went up in flames with the fire. And the bathroom doesn't count. The bathroom is always a wreck. I filled Rex's food dish with hamster crunchies, a peanut, a green bean, and a piece of pretzel. I gave him fresh water. I said, hello. Rex backed out of his soup can, stuffed the green bean and pretzel into his cheek, and rushed back into his can. It was 4 o'clock, and I had to be at my parents' house at 6. I turned my computer on and surfed the net for news of Ranger. I went to the site for missing children, and I visited some of the news sites. No information beyond what was initially released. Vinny belongs to PBUS, Professional Bail Agents of the United States. PBUS shares information and loosely links agencies nationwide. A couple months ago, a Virginia agency needed help locating a guy who'd skipped out of their area and was believed to be in Trenton. I found the guy and held him until the agency could get someone to Trenton to take possession. I had a business card from John Nash, the agent who collected the FTA, and I thought he might be willing to do me a favor. I emailed Nash and asked if he knew anything about Ranger. Bail bonds is a pretty small world. Agents know when new competition pops up in their neighborhood. I ran through my spam box and deleted 64 ads for penis enhancement, 17 ads for animal porn sites, and 2 ads for cheap credit. Beautification was next on my list. I jumped into the shower, did what I could to improve on nature by way of makeup and hair gel, got dressed in my best jeans and sexy little shirt, and took off for my parents' house. Morelli arrived a beat after I did.
Everyone to the table, my mother said. Stephanie, you get the mashed potatoes from the kitchen.
Dinner in my parents' house happens precisely at 6 o'clock. 5 minutes late, and it could all be ruined. Burn pot roast, cold potatoes, overcooked green beans, a disaster of biblical proportions. My father was first to sit. He had his fork in hand and his attention focused on the kitchen door, waiting for my mother to emerge with the pot roast. Grandma Mazur set the beans on the table and took her place across from Morelli and me. My mother followed with the meat, and we all dug in. If a man attended enough pot roast dinners in the presence of a single woman in her family, it was a marriage, in the eyes of the Berg, if not God. And Morelli was dangerously close to marriage by pot roast. There's a part of me that likes the comfortable intimacy between Morelli and me at the table. I like the way his knee snuggles against mine, and I like the way he accepts my family. And I like the way he looks with a glass of red wine in his hand, relaxed and confident, his dark eyes not missing anything. In fact, there isn't a lot not to like about Morelli. So the hesitancy I have to commit is confusing. I suppose it has something to do with the fact that I'm horribly attracted to Ranger. Not that I would ever commit to Ranger. Ranger is an accident waiting to happen. Still, the heat is there.
I was talking to Merle Grieber today, Grandma Mazur said. She lives two houses down from Mary Lee Truck, and she said Mary Lee's feeling much better. I guess she's got the hot flashes under control. And the stitches came out on her husband's behind from where she stabbed him. And word is, he's thinking about dropping the charges against her and moving back home. Merle said only problem now is it looks like Mary Lee's putting on weight.
The unfortunate result of acquiring happiness at the bakery.
Anyone hear anything about that little girl who was kidnapped? Grandma asked.
She's still missing, I said.
People are saying Ranger took her. I hope for her sake that's true because he wouldn't hurt her. It's still a terrible thing.
We all lapsed into silence after that. Not that silence was abnormal at my parents' table. We tended not to multitask body functions. When we sat down to eat, we got to it.
Oh, man, you're kidding, Morelli said. You want me to do what?
It was 8:30, and we were walking Bob around Morelli's neighborhood so Bob could do one last tinkle. I want you to go to the hole with me. Lou is singing there tonight, and I feel like I should be supportive. And I thought it wouldn't hurt to have an armed cop in the room.
Lula can't sing. I've heard her sing. She's tone deaf.
Yeah, but she looks good in her dress.
As long as she doesn't bend over.
And she's singing with Sally Sweet in his band. None of them can sing. They just play loud enough to drown themselves out.
I had plans for tonight, Morelli said.
Would those be the same plans you had for last night?
The basic plan is the same, but I have a few variations I thought I'd throw in.
Look on the positive side. You could try to get me liquored up at the hole, and I might come up with some of my own variations. I'm an animal when I'm liquored up. Morelli smiled at me.
Good point.
Did you have any luck getting information for me on Ranger?
No photo. He doesn't have a Virginia driver's license, and no captures on record. Sorry.
That's okay. I suspected there wouldn't be anything, but I thought it was worth a try.
What about the woman? Have you talked to her? Morelli asked.
Carmen? I can hear her release a safety on her Glock when I get within 2 feet of her.
Do you want me to roust her?
No. At least this way I know where to find her. And as long as there's distance between us, I don't think she's dangerous. She's not exactly a sharpshooter. We took Bob back to the house, locked up, and headed off in Morelli's SUV. Morelli used to have a truck, but he traded it in so Bob could ride with him and be more comfy in bad weather. The hole was on 3rd, in an area top-loaded with bars and pawn shops and adult video stores. Sandwiched between the bottom-feeder businesses were bedraggled drugstores, convenience stores, rooming houses, and fast-food franchises. Morelli drove around 3 blocks looking for a parking space, finding none. He turned into the alley behind the hole and found a space reserved for employees. It's good to be a cop, I said to him.
Sometimes.
We entered through the back door, skirted around the kitchen, walked past the restrooms, and stepped into a large room packed with people. The stagnant air was saturated with kitchen grease and smelled like beer and booze and weed. There was a small stage at one end. The stage was set with amps and stand-up mics. A mahogany bar stretched the length of one wall, and everywhere else there were round tables crammed with chairs. There was at least one person sitting in every chair. The noise level was set at roar. Most of the women were in tube tops and shorts. The men wore jeans and muscle shirts, chains and tattoos. I was still in my jeans and little t-shirt. Morelli was wearing a gun on his ankle and at his back, both covered by clothes. Morelli snagged a waitress by the strap on her tank top, gave her a 20, and ordered 2 Coronas. You're disturbingly good at this, I said to Morelli.
I had a wild youth.
That was an understatement. Morelli had been a womanizer and a bar brawler of the first magnitude. I slipped my hand into his and we smiled at each other. And it was one of those moments of understanding that happens between people with a long history together. I chugged down a cold Corona and stood close to Morelli. The lights blinked, and the What appeared on stage. There was a guy on drums, a guy on keyboard, and a guy on bass. They set up and rapped out a fanfare. No one on the floor paid any attention. And then Lula and Sally came out, and everyone turned and gaped. Lula was wearing the gold dress and spike-heeled shoes, and Sally was wearing his guitar, dangly red sparkly earrings, 4-inch red sequined heels with 2-inch platform soles, and a red sequined thong. He'd forgone his usual platinum Marilyn Monroe wig and was au naturel in his shoulder-length, kinky, curled black hair. His big, gangly, hairy body ambled up to the mic, and he gave a loud strum on the guitar that brought the house down.
"I usually wear a dress," Sally said, "but people told me it might not go over here, so I wore this thong instead. What do you think?"
Everyone whistled and hooted. Morelli had his arm around me and a grin on his face. I was smiling too, but I was afraid the good mood of the audience wasn't going to last. It looked to me like this was a crowd with a short attention span. Sally Sweet has been punk, funk, rock, country western, and everything in between. This band looked to me like a 70s cover band, since the first song was Love Machine. Lula had a handheld mic and was doing a routine somewhere between Tina Turner and a Baptist revival meeting. It wasn't bad, but every time she raised her arms, the skimpy gold dress would hike up, and she'd have to tug it back down over her ass. Halfway through the song, Lula lost her place and gave up on the lyrics and started singing, "Love Machine, la la la, Love Machine." Not that it mattered. The entire audience was mesmerized by the fleeting glimpses of Lula's sized triple extra large leopard thong. When the song ended, someone yelled out that he wanted to hear Love Shack.
"No way," came back from the other side of the room. "Disco Inferno."
"Disco Inferno is gay," the first guy yelled. "Only pussies like Disco Inferno."
"Pussy this,"
the Disco Inferno guy said, and he threw a beer bottle at the Love Shack guy.
"You better stop that," Lula said to the disco guy. "That's rude behavior."
An onion ring came sailing out of the audience, hit Lula in the head, and dropped onto her chest.
"Now I'm getting mad," Lula said. "Who did that? I got a big grease spot on my dress now. You're getting my dry cleaning bill."
"Hey," someone yelled to Lula, "show us the rest of those big tits. I want to see your tits."
"How about you want to see my foot up your ass?" Lula said.
A "show us your tits" chant went up, and a bunch of the women flashed headlights. The drunk next to me grabbed my shirt and attempted to pull it over my head.
"Show me your tits," he said.
And that was the last thing he said, because Morelli shoved his fist into the guy's face. It pretty much went downhill after that. Beer bottles were flying, and the room looked like a WWE cage match with a frenzied mob smashing furniture, scratching and clawing and punching each other out. Sally went off the stage with a war whoop, wading into the mess, whacking guys with his guitar, and Lula crawled under a table. Morelli wrapped an arm around my middle, lifted me 2 inches off the floor, and fought his way toward the hall leading to the restrooms and rear door, laying waste to anyone in his way. He got me outside, and he went back in for Lula. He shoved Lula out the rear door just as the police arrived, front and rear. Eddie Gazzara was in one of the squad cars angled behind Morelli's SUV. He was a good friend, and he was married to my cousin, Shirley the Whiner. He was with 3 other cops, and they all had big smiles when they saw Morelli and Lula and me.
"What's going on?" Gazzara wanted to know, working hard not to totally crack up.
"I got hit with an onion ring," Lula said.
"Anything else?"
he asked Morelli.
"Nope, that's about it," Morelli said, hands loose at his side, knuckles scraped and bleeding, bruise flowering on his right cheekbone.
"Be nice if you move your car so we could get out of here. And when you go inside, you might look for a guy in a red thong. He's with us."
Morelli was slouched on the couch, holding an ice pack to his bruised cheek, taking in the last minutes of a West Coast ball game. "It could have been worse," I said.
"It could have been a lot worse. We could have had to listen to another set of songs."
"We'd probably be sitting in jail right now if you weren't a cop."
"My being a cop had nothing to do with it. Gazzara would never arrest you. I went along for the ride on this one."
"You don't talk much about being a cop anymore." Morelli tossed the ice pack to the floor.
"I'm working homicide. there's not much I'd want to talk about. I'm up to my armpits in gang-related killings. The only decent part is usually they kill each other.
He clicked the game off.
This game is boring. I bet we can find more interesting things to look at if we go upstairs.
The first applicant was already in the office when I arrived. He was wearing chaps, and he had a sawed-off strapped to his back.
We don't actually dress like bounty hunters in this office, Connie was explaining to him. We find it's too obvious.
Yeah, and the chaps make your ass look big, Lula said. You go around looking like that and the fashion police gonna come after you.
I always dress like this, the guy said. I ride a hog.
What about the sawed-off? Connie asked.
What about it?
Two more applicants came and went after the guy with the chaps. I cracked my knuckles through both of them, wanting to move on. I had three FTAs targeted for today, plus Caroline Scarzoli was still at large. And Lonnie Johnson was out there somewhere. And the truth was, I didn't want to find any of these people. I wanted to find Ranger. When the last applicant walked out the door, Connie wrenched her bottom drawer open, unscrewed a bottle of Jack Daniels, and chugged some down.
Okay, she said. I feel better now.
I like this job interviewing shit, Lula said. It's a real boost to my self-esteem. Even with my damaged early years, I'm looking good up against these freaks.
Where's Pickle? I asked Connie.
He's working Monday through Friday. Since we usually only work half day on Saturday anyway, I gave him weekends off.
I looked out the front window at the black SUV. It was starting to feel eerie. No one ever saw Carmen, just the tinted black windows.
The SUV is still out there, I said.
When was the last time anyone saw that SUV move?
It was here when I arrived this morning, and I guess it was here when I left last night, Connie said.
I took a slurp of booze from Connie's bottle. I need to take a look at the car. I crossed the street, and I knocked on the driver's side window, but nothing happened. I looked in through the windshield. Nobody home. Blood everywhere. I turned and slid down the car until I reached pavement. I sat there with my head between my knees until the nausea was under control and the noise subsided in my head. I got to my knees, waited a moment for the fog to clear, and then got to my feet. I walked to the rear of the SUV where the smell of decomposing flesh was strong. I put my face to the glass and squinted through the tinted window. A tarp had been pulled across the cargo area. I took my cell phone out and called Morelli.
You might want to get over here, I said.
I think I have a body for you. Chapter 7. Connie and Lula and I waited across the street in front of the bonds office while the police did their thing. I was so terrified at what would be found that my fingers were numb, and I could feel tears welling behind my eyes. I suspected Carmen was in the back of the SUV, but it could as easily be Ranger or his little girl, Julie. Morelli stood to the side watching while a uniform opened the back hatch and slid the tarp aside. Morelli's eyes flicked to the body in the cargo area and then to me.
Carmen, he mouthed to me.
I wasn't sure what I felt. A mixture of emotion. Horror for Carmen and relief that it wasn't Ranger or the child. Did we get information back on Julie's mother and stepfather? I asked Connie. Anything on the Virginia business?
I saw reports come in, but I didn't read them.
We went into the office and Connie pulled up the reports. Rachel Martin had no work history. High school graduate. Lived her whole life in Miami. Nothing derogatory in her credit file. Her banking history showed a steady money stream from Ranger. No criminal history. She married Ronald Martin 8 years ago. They bought a house shortly after they were married, and they were still at that same address. Ronald Martin was 7 years older than his wife, also a high school graduate. No college.